Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin of Third Space, and we're here again for this week's conversation and a wonderful source written by Justin about grief. And Justin, I can tell you today I'm here in the by hook or by crook sense and kind of wobbly, grief-filled myself and wandering into this with you in a very kind of tender, vulnerable, undefined kind of human way this morning. I mean, a week of illness with the whole family being ill and a hospital stay for my little four-year-old, and have felt really big things this week. And so the fact that we're speaking of grief and I'm kind of inside grief at the moment, it's really beautiful, and I'm really grateful to be here and to also be in the kind of the tenderness of something you've written as well. It feels really supportive and holding for me too. So I'm grateful to be wandering in and seeing what grief wants today.
Thank you, Lizzie. It's so very good to see you, and hello everybody, and welcome as well. It's it's a while, Lizzie, since I've brought a source to this that's mine, and this one feels very personal and very tender and a bit vulnerable to bring. And it's a lovely feeling to be surrounded by circles and circles of people around this conversation, which I think is very resonant for both of us. So I want to say hello to everyone. Welcome. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for sharing this conversation with friends and colleagues and loved ones, which we know that many people do. To those of you who are with us every week and have been for over 7 years or maybe more recently, and for those of you who, we had a lovely email this week from someone we know who's also a listener, follower of this, who said who dips in and out every now and again. So hello and welcome to all the dippers in and out. You're very welcome, so welcome to be here as well. And you can always find the sources if you're new to us. We have a lovely website, turningtowards.life, where you can find all the conversation and all the 366 sources, and also in the notes that go out with the podcast. Also in our Facebook group, which is a good place to come and join and chat with us and chat with other people, to, just search for Turning Towards Life. So those are all places you can find this. And I'm also going to say something about it, Lizzie, just before I read this. I have no idea when I wrote this, although there are clues in the season of it, in the words. It's almost certainly a spring or summertime something that I wrote, but it has sat in my list of possible sources, source texts for Turning Towards Life for a long time. And it felt like this week it wanted to come out. And I'm feeling it particularly this morning. Also, yesterday, Lizzie, was Yom Kippur, one of the very big days in the Jewish calendar, and one of the things that happens on a very long and intense day is a memorial service in which the names of all the people who died in the community and all the family members of people in the community who have died get read out. It's always a very long list. And it's really something I always feel to hear and read a long list of people's names and to make each one into a person. When you have many people, it's easy to forget that every single person who gets lost to us is a parent or a sister or a child or a friend or a colleague, or real people in real life. But that's not where this came from. I'll probably get to say a little bit more as we read. So I'll read it first. This is called What Grief Wants. I only want one thing. I want you to pay attention. I want you to look in her eyes now, while there is still time, while there is still breath, while the magnolias unfold into flower quietly in the garden. I want you to feel all the way through what it is like as she looks back at you while she still can, while you are here to receive, to be seen. I will be ready to hold you, flood you, carry you when all the gazing is done. I want you to receive your life whilst there is still life to receive. We will wail together about its loss in good time. But now is not the time for that. It is not the time for turning away, for trying to avoid anything, for trying not to feel. There will be a time when you have no choice but to be turned away, but that time is not now. I want you to feel what it is like to release your desperate grasp around what you could never hold on to anyway. To delight in the living flow with its everyday beginnings and its always endings. I want you to feel the shining aliveness of everything you will lose while it is still here.
Hey, Justin. What grief wants. I only want one thing. I want you to pay attention. I want you to look in her eyes now, while there's still time, while there's still breath, while the magnolias unfold into flower quietly in the garden. I want you to feel all the way through what it's like as she looks back at you while she still can. While you're here to receive, to be seen. I will be ready to hold you, flood you, carry you when all the gazing is done. I want you to receive your life while there is life to receive. We will wail together about its loss in good time. But now is not the time for that. It is not the time for turning away, for trying to avoid anything, for trying not to feel. There'll be a time when you have no choice but to be turned away, but that time is not now. I want you to feel what it is like to release your desperate grasp around what you could never hold on to anyway, to delight in the living flow with its everyday beginning and its always endings. I want you to feel the shining aliveness of everything you will lose while it is still here.
Thank you, Lizzie. Well, where this started for me, why I felt like I wanted to put these words down and why I want to read them again today, is that I, at some point, started to come to see that I was so afraid of grief that, and all the feelings of loss that come from our inevitable losing, that it seemed for quite a long time a very plausible strategy. I didn't realize this was what I was doing, but was to minimize my receiving of life and minimize my feeling of anything so that I would avoid the feelings of loss that I was so frightened of. And it's taken me a very long time in my life, Lizzie, to figure out how afraid of grief itself I've been. And that very often, we've talked about this, we've talked so many times over these 7 years about different patterns of turning away from our lives that we have. You know, and so one of them that was really present for me, and I suppose must be present for many people, is a kind of numbing, like, let me turn away from my life now and then it won't be so painful when I lose people and things and myself and my capacities and all of that. If I sort of minimize it now, I'll minimize that, which is one giant experiential avoidance strategy. But the other thing that has been such a revelation to me has been to find out how often I'll substitute another feeling that I can feel like I can deal with better than the one I don't want to feel. So a really good example is, turns out there are parts of me, and we've also talked lots about parts and essential self and all of this, there are parts of me that would much rather be afraid than to be grief-filled. So I can substitute fear, which keeps me activated and sort of alert and attentive. And for those sort of very protective parts of me, feeling afraid is less frightening than really feeling life in its fullness and then losing it. So it's a really elaborate experiential avoidance strategy. And in the end, having seen that, what I keep on learning is that it's very simple, which I don't mean to diminish the complexity and anything else and all of the wrangling inside me that I've had. But it is as it says in this source, which is you're here right now with me, which I'm so very grateful for. Here you are. I couldn't help but hear your words and look at you, Lizzie, as we're talking. Here you are, and you're here now. And all the losses which will come in this friendship and these big commitments that we're up to together, they'll all end. They'll come. Boy, it turns out it's not worth spending all of my time trying to avoid the inevitable loss in order to avoid a future loss. The cost is so high from doing that. So I've been practicing and wanting to practice the invitation that are in these words, which is stop storing up protection and instead really let myself receive who's here with me right now while I can, which also means receiving myself right now while I can. It's very real to do that, and I think these very protective parts of me would rather I didn't have much realness. They'd rather substitute realness for false, actually, but for safety. And we only get this once, so I feel very fierce, and these days, at least today, fierce and joyful about the possibility of feeling it all and the truth of it.
I can feel the conundrum in me, Justin, as you say all of this, because there's big parts of me that go, oh gosh, of course, just keep moving towards and opening and loving and falling in love more and more. Because as you say, it disappears, it's going to go, we're going to lose it all. So that's the only thing to do. But really, in the same breath comes the, yeah, but then there's even more to be afraid of. There's this little dance that happens in me of like, no, but if I love anymore, if I lay myself bare anymore to the vulnerability of this being human, then I'll have even more to be afraid of. And of course, then when I come to the end of that thought, the only thing there is to do is to keep loving. But it feels like a kind of a dance, a little cyclical dance that happens because it is so excruciating, really, to feel as I feel in the world. To love as I love, and to be faced with what is just simply true. And there's nothing that can be done about any of it. It is true that these truths of us losing what we love, us losing each other, the things that we're doing, the things we're up to, it's all very real. And we can't avoid that. And I also love, Justin, though, that the way you've written this is that grief itself, love itself, wants to say these things to us. So when you read it the first time, I suddenly felt less afraid of grief because I could feel that grief wants all this for me too, as well as it being the feelings that come when the inevitable loss is here. I feel like they're going to have us and that we're done for. And there's so much letting go to be done. And how do you do that anyway? And yet, this is what grief wants for us. I think it's very, very beautiful the way that you have turned us towards grief rather than kept it as a thing that we may not have defined as to have any wanting about it at all. But it's just a scary thing that we're going to have to face one day. And that what you've done is you brought it right here to talk to us so that we can feel it now rather than relate to it as something down the road that's big and scary and tsunami-like that's going to gobble me up and I'm never going to survive it, kind of thing. Or at least that's how I relate to this when I hold it away from me, when I hold it down the road or something. But to let it be here and to let it have what it wants is such a different way to live than to keep it somewhere for the future that I might not ever, or I can delude myself that I might never have to face that, so I'll just pop that down the road and be stay scared of it forever or something. But feeling this invitation to what it wants, that wants me to pay attention and to turn towards and to not avoid and to feel. And this isn't the time where I have no choice. This is the time where I do have choice. And I am invited into delight, into the living flow, to delight in the living flow of the endings and the beginnings. And I think also there's something that draws us particularly close to this ending and beginningness when we are parenting young children, which I am at the moment, which is that everything feels like that all the time. Like there's no respite from it. Every day, you're in the thick, I'm in the thick of life. There's no stepping off it. You know, there's no stepping back. There's no, like, do you know what? I think I'll read a book now. Like, there's no kind of reflection time sometimes, even. And so this intense relationship to grief feels really, 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 really here in my life. And to feel the gift of that and as a way of relating and fully living into the richness of the experience of my life right now, it requires me to breathe more deeply, to gentle myself into the moments ever more. And this invitation, Justin, is so beautiful. I might print it out and put it somewhere, to delight in the living flow with its everyday beginnings and its always endings. It just feels like the story of my life. Like that just needs to happen because you said you had an elaborate, I think you called it avoidance plan or something, an experiential avoidance plan, an elaborate one. And I have lots of elaborate ones that take me away from that. And yet, that's never not there in the day, somewhere, of just, oh my gosh, this is like an ongoing, I'm on a train and I can't get off the train, even if I want to get off the train. So how am I going to be on the train? That's the question I'm just living in all the time. And it is a living flow and it is always beginning and it is always ending. And that's all what is grief. All of that is grief. And if we didn't ask that of ourselves to turn towards this, we wouldn't even know that was grief. That's how I feel. I would think grief was only for people who are around people who die, rather than grief being a living something that exists in the center of all of our lives. And it only comes to find us in that particular way. I mean, it will find us anyway, but if we only experience grief there when there's loss of that particular kind where somebody is not in their bodies anymore. If we only experience it then, of course it's scary, of course it's frightening, because we're not used to this feeling of vulnerability and this feeling of having to relate to life in a whole new different way. So I'm very, very grateful for you bringing this and bringing it into the immediacy of life, rather than holding it away for some faraway shore of something that's going to happen one day that I don't need to think about for now because it's not me.
Well, I think it's here all the time for any of us who really allow ourselves to love anyone or anything. Just that if we take a moment to feel what it's like to be with someone who really matters to us, or who we really care about, or whose presence is important to us, in amidst, if we'll allow ourselves to feel the joy of that, what we'll also almost certainly feel is at least the tinges of the grief of the loss of it. And in among my very elaborate strategies still are, because I think so much of this works below the level of our conscious intention. All the parts of us that are taking care of various things, I really have to watch. Oh, there I am not letting myself really receive the joy and the depth and the sacredness of this moment, because I'm also beginning to feel the tinges of grief at its loss. And let's just shut all of that down right away. And I have to watch it, because I think a lot of the time I'm not doing that in a sense deliberately, in a way that my conscious thinking mind will know, but it's very deeply habitual, the way my body contracts, the way, anyway. I seems to me that the story we have about emotions in our culture is really, really unhelpful, because we've got stories about emotions which are things like, well, you should just feel them without, you know, like, whoa, whatever you're feeling, just let it out. Sometimes that's incredibly unhelpful if it's rage, for example, and it's inappropriate and we have to take care of it. But we've also got stories about emotions that come from the very sort of rationalistic, sort of shallow rationalistic sides of our culture, which say emotions are things to be put out of the way because they are all unhelpful, and a clear thinking mind will. And then we inherit stories about emotions as being sort of like steam and pressure that build up in us, but none of them tell the story about the intelligence of any of these. So grief, I'd much prefer not to talk about as an emotion, although even though it is filled with all kinds of emotions, that grief, as you drew attention to, Lizzie, grief is an intelligent presence that is going to come and visit us and sit with us and work through us, and that it is purposeful. And like you said, because we can't avoid it, we could try, as I have done in so many ways, to sort of, you know, shift it out of the way or block its presence. But if instead we treat it as a benevolent and also giant presence that is going to make itself known to us and move, do its work with us, then instead of fighting it off or denying it, we can maybe start to open to, it's going to change us. It's going to show us something about our lives, that we and ourselves and who and what we love, that is a necessary part of our becoming ourselves and a necessary part of our deepening. So that's what I suppose what I've been working on seeing, is seeing the intelligent presence in all of this. And then, as you're drawing attention to, none of this only happens at the moment when we face our biggest losses. It's all here. Like, I can feel it now, sitting and looking at you and talking with you and knowing that this won't always be. So if I can let myself feel that, oh, grief is present now and it's working with me now, not just at the moment of losses, but it's working with me now, then it's very, very close to joy. Because it's a real reminder. If I can touch into the feelings, it's like the tendrils of grief that are here with the people I love the most and in what I love doing the most, then I can feel my body move, like I'm coming more upright and more open. And I want to receive every drop of this, but also weirdly, not just for myself. That might sound like I sort of want to drink it up so I can get the joyful experience, but actually I don't even mean that. I think what I mean is, it's grief shows us that things really matter. And if we try and make everything not matter so we don't feel the grief, we're going to get hit by it eventually anyway, because grief is telling us that things really matter. It's inescapable that that's the case. So it's a very bittersweet, for me, it's a very bittersweet feeling, actually, of, and I mean that in the best way, like I really, really like bittersweet mints, for example. There's a, like, that are sweet and sharp at the same time. It's a sort of, in a way, it's also a delicious thing to feel the hardness of loss, but also the amplified joy and appreciation and tenderness and sacredness of that which will be lost, because I can feel that it, the truth that it will be lost. Francis Weller, who we've mentioned a few times, talks about in his book The Wild Edge of Sorrow, talks about the risk if we don't do this is that we just back ourselves out of our lives, and we back ourselves out of our lives long before we have to face any of the intensity of grief's visitations, because we think it's like a deal that will that will save us from being visited in that way. And what a tragedy to back ourselves out of our lives.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, Justin, I really want to back out. You know, sometimes I really go, oh, this is this little old beaten heart. Can't take any more loving people. And feeling all the feelings of that. And I don't know what's happened, Justin. And I think I attribute this to the work that we do. Sometimes I feel it's because we've crossed the line of some kind, which I'm not sure I know how to define, where I certainly can't shut myself down anymore. I can't decide not to feel or something. Like I can't, and I know I lived a lot of time not feeling things and putting things in boxes and just not going there kind of thing. And over the years of discovery and excavation or inner work, whatever we would call it, I feel there's a, I think I want to honor those of us who take this path of learning and becoming aware of all of the things, like you're talking about your elaborate escape strategies or whatever. You know, it takes introspection and feeling and understanding ourselves and looking at our stories and our histories and ancestry and all those things to really know what this one, this being is that we've been, we're inhabiting in this lifetime, and to feel and to unpick things and get to the point of things in ourselves. And in the doing of that, we become unturnbackable. We become, you can't unsee something that you saw. It has that kind of quality to it, the path that we're on. And that's quite something. And so the courage to step on it in the first place, I want to honor that, because we didn't know we wouldn't be able to turn back. And yet we can't. We can't close down once we've opened up. We can't unsee something that we've seen. We can't unfeel something that we felt. Even if we do manage to push it down or block it out or something, it's still feelable when we come to the place where we feel able to feel again. And I'm feeling this appreciation for being open to feel at this depth, to experience life at this depth, to feel the shining aliveness of everything we will lose while it's still here. It's a really big thing. It's a really big ask of a human being to feel all the feelings. And then I start thinking, well, how extraordinary is humanness, that this kind of emotion, this kind of feeling, this kind of connection, this kind of wanting of one another's presence in each other's lives, and the mattering that that is, like you were saying. How amazing that that's one of our capacities, to connect like that, to feel part of one another, to feel that we are each other in some way. And so when something is lost, we're losing parts of ourselves. And it really is a tender, tender ride to be human and to be honest about what it is to be connected to one another in this life. And I want to honor that grief is basically life. Grief is love, grief is life, grief is all of the things that we hold dear, turned into one word somehow. And it is quite a thing to feel that there's no turning back. You know, it's once this living flow has been revealed, we can't then pretend that the living flow doesn't exist. We can't pretend that the love doesn't reside in every little pocket of everything. It's just on. And we have to then breathe and let it keep coming. Because once the gates are open, you can't close them again. I'm getting that image of a dam or something where, once those things are open, unless you have some crazy powerful mechanism that inches them back closed again, and somehow the flow stops a bit, and the wind is on your side, they might close, kind of thing. It's just not possible. And so I'm in awe of our capacity and our humanness that is the vessel that we allow this love and this grief to flow through, and that when we've opened the gates, it's kind of impossible to close them again.
Such a counter to the reductionist stories that we have about ourselves, that life is somehow meaningless and shallow, and that we're so fashionable to think of ourselves as machines. And also to there's much available to us in our wider culture that will bring us in contact with this depth, Lizzie, but there's also so much that will carry us away from it. And the devices that we carry around in our pockets, which I think could be and can sometimes be the most exquisite technological means for our being in contact with one another, also serve to fill us with distraction that takes us away. And particularly when we're feeling afraid, when we should be feeling sad, or when we're feeling, so we have to work against all of that. So I'm very grateful for this kind of conversation. And maybe all of this in the end is what being human is for. Because there is, in the end, nothing but experience. I mean, I don't mean that in a reductionist way. There's you and there's me and there's. But if we look at our lives, what we actually have of our lives is what we experience. And the unique thing about humans is we have choices about how we experience what we experience and what we make of it and what we do with it. So that others may experience too. We can take care of one another in this way. And I increasingly think that we're here in many ways to bring out the depth and the sacredness of everything, to receive while we can and to pass it on as well. And that's what we're here to do. Now, thank you for this very, very wonderful conversation this morning. Obviously, there are many times in this long conversation we have where I feel like this is so different to doing a podcast where we talk to people about things we already know. That's not at all what we're doing here. It's more like discovering together and hoping that the process of our discovering together, that this actual process of talking to one another is of benefit to other people, which I know it is, because many of you who are with us tell us that being in on this process is helpful to your process. So, Lizzie, thank you for being so open, courageous, loving, wise person who's willing to get into the thick of this stuff live on air every week with me and with me. And thank you to all of you who are alongside us as well, which makes this something with ever more resonance and meaning. We're going to end here, and you're so welcome, all of you, to be in contact with us. Hello at turningtowards.life. We occasionally get emails. That's wonderful. You can support us if you want at the turningtowards.life website. And if you're interested in the work that gave birth to all of this, wearethirdspace.org is where all of that lives. And all being well, we will see you again in a week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.